This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Cincinnati Art Museum's early Cincinnati galleries in the Cincinnati Wing reopened on the first of this month. These galleries tell the first chapter in the story of the Cincinnati Wing, detailing the city's rise as an artistic center from its founding in the late 18th century through the years leading to the Civil War. Recent renovations allow for the galleries to lead chronologically into other galleries of the Cincinnati Wing for the first time since the Wing's debut in 2003. Joining us from the Cincinnati Art Museum to discuss that are Amy Dehan, curator of decorative arts and design, and Julie Aronson, curator of American painting, sculpture, and drawings. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Amy and Julie, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Amy, what is the first really big change that visitors are going to see when they visit the Cincinnati Wing? What are they going to notice?
So we've completely reoriented the galleries. So you're entering from a new access point. And we've refreshed everything. We've added a number of great new pieces against a beautiful palette of colors. And we've tweaked one of the galleries that used to be our orientation gallery. It's now a gallery that focuses on the rich story of art patronage here in the Queen City and how that really set us up to become one of the leading art centers in the United States.
And Julie, what are some of the other things that have changed at the Cincinnati Wing?
Well, as Amy said, we've introduced some new objects to the collection, which are now on view, some for the first time. So that's very exciting.
What kind of objects? What are we talking about here?
We have a fantastic new painting, which is a folk portrait of Friedrich Billiards, who is a leading figure in Cincinnati's beer brewing history.
Okay, that seems appropriate.
Yes. It's a fantastic painting, and it actually shows the Lafayette Brewery, which was his company, in the background of the painting. And the building is still standing today on McMicken Avenue.
Well, why did the museum decide to make all these changes, Amy? Well, it just felt like it was time to refresh things, or
that, and it kind of morphed out of these renovations that we've been working on over the past year, and making the museum work better for our visitors, a little more intuitive from a visitor standpoint and approach.
Now, how big is the Cincinnati Wing, and what all does it contain?
It's a series of 15 galleries, and it contains artwork that was made by Cincinnatians, for Cincinnatians, or that depicts Cincinnati or Cincinnatians. And it begins with the founding of the city in 1788 and goes clear up through the contemporary period.
Julie, who are some of the artists that the galleries have on display? Who are some of the prominent local artists?
Our new galleries feature Hiram Powers is probably one of the most important, who was a neoclassical sculptor whose career really was launched in Cincinnati but ends up ultimately living in Italy but does a lot of work for Cincinnati patrons. And Robert Duncanson, who was a wonderful painter. He was an African-American artist who really became the first professionally successful landscape painter of his ethnicity, I should say, in America. And it's really because of his own determination and Cincinnati, wealthy Cincinnatians who supported his career, many of whom were of abolitionist sympathies, that he was able to achieve the importance that he did.
Amy, any idea how many different local artists are represented by the galleries?
Oh, goodness, that would be quite a number. I'm not sure that we've ever taken tally of that, but I would say in the hundreds, wouldn't you, Julie?
Yes, I think we have about 400 objects on display in the Cincinnati Wing.
Now, the galleries tell the story of Cincinnati's early days from its founding, like you were saying, Amy, in the late 18th century up to the Civil War. How did the city during that time, how did it rise to become an artistic center?
Well, a lot of that was promoted by our quick rise as an industrial center. A lot of craftspeople, a lot of artists were drawn to this city at the edge of the frontier and the possibilities that were here and the wealth that was starting to be accumulated in this area. And that's really kind of where the story begins.
And you mentioned earlier that a lot of it was prominent patrons supporting the arts. How big of a role was that?
Right. Like Ruben Springer, who was a wonderful patron, who not only had his own art collection, but also was integral in establishing Music Hall. There was the Longworth family, Nicholas Longworth, and then his son Joseph and his grandson Mariah Longworth, who then went on to found Rookwood Pottery. Their commissions really kind of paved the way for other artists. The Longworths in particular, helped establish the Art Museum and the Art Academy of Cincinnati. So supported artists in many, many ways.
Julia, how did you go about gathering all these items that are in the galleries?
Well, the Cincinnati Art Museum has a very, very deep collection of work by Cincinnati artists and related to the history of the city, going all the way back to the museum's founding in the 1880s. So it's always fun to go into storage and sort of see what kind of stories things tell when you start to group them together.
It was also great when we started working on the wing, which originally opened in 2003. We knew we had quite a number of Cincinnati works that could tell a wonderful story, but as we were working, we started to kind of second guess ourselves and think, oh my goodness, do we have enough to fill 15 galleries worth of space? But then we ended up having twice as much to fill that space. And there's been incredible community buy-in. So as we were working on the project, people would call, and out of the blue, we'd have people say, we have this wonderful art carved chair that Aunt May carved. Would you be interested? Or other wonderful things that had passed down through their families, and they ended up contributing to the art museum.
What's the process for choosing what goes into the galleries?
We always start with a list that's about three times longer than what we can actually accommodate, and a lot of it has to do with conversations with each other, trying to see, what relationships things might have to one another. We each have our own specialties, so we don't necessarily know each other's collections as well as we know our own. So it's really a great partnership that happens when we start to talk about the things that we have in the collection. And of course, there are always things that we can't put out that we wish we could. There are always very sad moments in planning something like this. We hope that we can rotate them in.
Now you have me curious, Julie. What are some of the things that you wish you could have put in that you didn't put in?
Well, sometimes there are paintings that are just too large, or something that there may be practical considerations too. We just don't have the space to accommodate something as large as something else that we might be able to fit.
What about you? Anything you ever said, I wish I could have put that in, now I regret that I didn't put it in?
Well, there are frequently those pieces. I mean, I work with furniture and ceramics and silver, and so some of that early furniture was quite large. So there are only so many sideboards or large cabinets that you can put in a given gallery. So there's always push and give and take. And as Julie said, it's our intention to rotate things through the galleries so that everything has its chance to tell its story and contribute to the story.
So it's like a living, breathing
Absolutely.
Kind of thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. It is. And one of the things that this new installation has allowed us to do was to pull some things from storage that haven't been out. So there are things, in addition to things that are completely new to the collection, there are some things that have come out of the basement. And that's always a wonderful thing.
For instance, one thing that I regretted not being able to fit in when we first installed these galleries way back in 2003 was a table produced by H.N. Wenning, who was a German-born craftsperson who had his own furniture manufacturing business here in the city. And he's known for creating what we now call Cincinnati dog tables. So it's a okay. marble-topped center table, and between the legs there's a shelf, and on that little shelf rests a carved dog. And I've seen many of these now that I know what they are. I'm looking for them. And I've seen many of them. Each has a different dog. I've seen one with a rabbit. And so they're really kind of fun kind of folksy pieces from our past.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. How broad is your scope when you go out looking for things? Are you looking for things just from inside the U.S. or you go looking for things from all over the world?
For the wing, we're looking for things particularly
from Cincinnati.
Okay. But I also cover American decorative arts and European decorative arts from the medieval period to right now. So it's quite a broad spectrum of things.
Julie?
Well, and I'm responsible for the American collection from the colonial period to about 1960. So that's sort of my focus on painting, sculpture, and drawings.
Now, you were talking about some of the new things, Julie, that are in the galleries.
Yes.
What are some of the you described the painting about the brewer.
Right.
What are some of the other new things?
There's a beautiful marble bust by an artist named Nathan Flint Baker, who lived in Walnut Hills and spent some time in Italy. And he did a sculpture for Spring Grove Cemetery, which unfortunately has really deteriorated. So this bust is a beautiful example of his work that people can come to see.
How have people been reacting to the refreshed galleries, the changes that you've made?
We've had some great responses so far, especially our docents, who are our volunteers who lead tours through the museum. And they're really excited to see these works presented in different ways and different groupings, and excited to take people through.
So what's the most popular piece in the galleries? What do you think?
That's hard.
Boy, that's a tough question.
It could be your favorite thing.
The most popular piece. Well, it's interesting. One thing that's kind of, has always sort of surprised me is that our shop has told us that postcards of a painting called The Harp of Erin, of this ideal figure of Ireland escaping her oppression from England, is one of the most popular paintings for postcard sales, which I always thought was interesting. And maybe we have a lot of Irish patrons who are particularly drawn to this painting of this beautiful woman in the white dress with shamrocks in her hair.
I know one of my favorite pieces is a tea service. It's a silver. It was created for Fenton Lawson, who was the founder of one of our first firefighting companies, and presented to him at his retirement. And it was sold by Beggs and Smith, a local silver dealers here in town, and it's chased with wonderful scenes of firefighting all around the bellies of each piece, the teapot, the coffee pot, the creamer. And then on the top, there are cast finials of little fire chiefs with fire trumpets tucked underneath their arms, and they would use these trumpets to fight or to call out orders as the men were fighting these blazes and burning buildings.
And that's one of your favorites.
It's one of my favorites.
One of your favorites. Okay.
It's fun to tour.
What do you think is the most unusual piece in the galleries?
That's actually one of them, I would say.
Oh,
maybe the balloon.
Oh, that's a new acquisition. Right.
The balloon.
We recently acquired a stoneware storage jug, and it is decorated on the exterior with blue cobalt and depicts a man in a hot air balloon. And we believe that it depicts Richard Clayton, who ascended into the air in a hot air balloon in 1835 from a small area on Court Street, small pavilion on Court Street, and set a record for the distance traveled by land in a hot air balloon. It made a national and international news and was quite the happening here in Cincinnati in 1835.
That's interesting. You believe it could be Richard Clayton. Mm-hmm. How do you research to find out the stories behind the paintings and the objects that you're getting?
Well, in the case of the jug with the balloon, there are wonderful accounts in newspapers about Richard Clayton's historic balloon ascent. There were even some engravings of that occurrence, and we've used those in the display. So we do everything from going through old newspapers, city directories, archives. There are lots of wonderful things that we get to dig into.
Lots of genealogical research.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a research intense job, Julie?
It is. I mean, that's really one of the great pleasures of it.
So what is the, now we're going to continue on this vein. What's the oldest object you have in the gallery?
The oldest object is a silver teaspoon made by Isaac Van Nuys, who came to Cincinnati from New Jersey in 1795. And this spoon was probably made pretty soon after his arrival here in Cincinnati.
Oldest painting?
The oldest painting is a portrait by an artist named Aaron Corwine. And it's a portrait of Thomas Johnson Matthews, who was a mathematician. And it dates from the 1820s. And it's really a remarkable story because Corwine came to Cincinnati from Maysville. He was, you know, even early in the 19th century, there was enough patronage here in the city to attract an artist to come. But the Cincinnatians recognized that he needed additional training and that he couldn't get that here. So they sent him to Philadelphia to train with the famous painter Thomas Sully in order to advance his professional development.
So with all these different items, paintings, objects, how tough is it to pull it all together, to tell a cohesive story about Cincinnati's past?
We work pretty well together. We usually come up with themes or ideas and start to connect objects that tie into those ideas or themes, and then kind of move out from there.
We're working with objects, so we know that there are always going to be gaps in the story, and there may be things that we're looking that we might like to add to the collection because we don't have a good representation of that, or we might want an example of an earlier painting, for example. You know, the addition of this portrait of Mr. Billiards, the brewer, was a great representation of Cincinnati brewing history, which was something that we never had before, and we don't have very many examples of work by itinerant portrait painters working here in the first half of the 19th century, so it fills a gap in that way too, and we're always looking for things to
okay,
do that.
So, yeah, you're open to anything. People can call you up and say, "I've got this interesting item, and would you consider it for the gallery?"
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the story of your sideboard
is a
good one.
We have a wonderful sideboard crafted by Mitchell and Rammelsberg. It's one of the largest furniture firms here in Cincinnati. And I got a call one day from a woman in Missoula, Montana. And she had this sideboard. She just inherited it from her mother. It's a large sideboard with a lot of exuberant carving on it. And at the top of the sideboard, there is, in three dimensions, a carved stag head with horns. So it's really one of those pieces that only a mother could love. And she did not care to have this in her own home, so she called and knew that we had a nice collection of Mitchell and Rammelsberg furniture and inquired as to whether we were interested. And I saw it. It knocked my socks off. It's just great. The carving is wonderful. It's one of those things that would have been in an 1850s, 1860s dining room. And so I said, yes, of course, we'd love to have it. And she had all of the provenance or the history of ownership that went with it. And it was originally purchased by a Civil War colonel for his home in Cleveland, Ohio, from the Cincinnati firm Mitchell and Rammelsberg.
Well, Amy and Julie, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Amy Dehan is curator of decorative arts and design, and Julie Aronson is curator of American painting, sculpture, and drawings. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our program at WVXU.org. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. Kevin Rawinski was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Some diseases have become very rare thanks to vaccines, but the U.S. experienced a record number of measles cases in 2014, and about 9,000 cases of whooping cough have already been reported this year. On the next Cincinnati edition, we'll discuss the importance of immunizations. We'll also learn what medical information students should know before heading off to campus and the role of today's university health centers. That's Cincinnati edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.